This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasodhi. It's our health and living segment, our doctor in the house, and Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist.
Hello.
In for his weekly show. Yeah, you were missing for a while.
Yes.
Where did you go?
Missing.
Yes.
Actually, you were missing for a while and I'm missing for a while. But, you know, we're back together now.
Yes, we are.
And no other guest today.
None at all.
So I've got all the limelight.
Because we picked a topic which is right up the alley of the drainage expert.
That's right. Okay. You know, you notice outside there, it's about to rain. So for those of you who are about to stuck in the traffic and feel like you're about to pee, I think you better stop and pee now because we're going to have conversation about a lot of wee.
A lot of it, actually. So today's show is titled Urine 101.
Oh,
so everything you need to know about the colour, everything you need to know about your urine. And the reason, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I mean, when my producers put this in front of me, I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? For 45 minutes, I have to talk about pee?
I do this for my life.
I know, right?
That's
so
right.
Who better to ask to do this show? Because it's coming off research University College of Dublin,
yes,
where they claim to have developed the first urine test for prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So then they thought, you know, before we go into that, let's talk about understanding the urine. And
exactly.
I thought it was quite clever, actually, because nobody really thinks about these things.
Yeah.
We probably have concerns.
That's right.
But we don't bring it up. Yes. So phone lines are open. Everything you need to know about your urine, 03-77-33-2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio.
Yes.
George.
Yes.
Do we have an obsession with our urine?
Well, I do because this is what I do for a living.
You don't have a choice.
No, I don't have a choice. Mm. But the thing is that I think... don't underestimate the diagnostic power of urine because, you know, for that study itself, it highlights that this is one of the bodily excrement that you don't think about much because we always tend to think about blood tests, you know, because we can diagnose many, many things. Today, I'm going to show you the amazing thing urine can actually tell us about your state of health. Because imagine that our kidneys are our filters. Our filters will be holding on all the good stuff and actually excreting all the bad stuff. So that will be a reflection of exactly what is overloaded in your body. For example, for somebody who has actually been on high protein diets, then your urine will be leaking with a lot of protein. So you'll be having frothy urines. And people, the first thing you noticed whenever you have any metabolic changes and when you urinate, the odor, the color, the amount, those are the things that will actually reflect on your state of health.
And I wonder if most of us actually pay much attention to it. I mean, you think it's a waste product, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you use it for pregnancy tests.
Exactly.
You use it for drug tests.
Now we potentially can use it for cancer diagnosis.
Yes, I'm testing for diseases. So
yes.
What is it about this?
About urine.
Yes.
What is urine?
What is it? Tell me, George.
Okay, right. Urine constitutes about 95% of water. Joe, imagine that the water is the medium that actually needs to carry all the good stuff and all the bad stuff in your body. And that needs to go through your kidneys. Both kidneys needs to be in a good state of health in order to filter all the bad stuff, reabsorb all the good stuff, and then eventually whatever is left behind that actually needs to be excreted. So you just imagine that we use analysis of a urine sample. You would imagine 99% of that will be water and other kind of constituents that will be in there will be sodium, which is salt, potassium. Then you have some degree of nitrites. You will have urea. You will have other issues, components such as medications. If you take excess amount of medications, everyone worries about how it will damage your kidneys. And then that is sometimes can be quite true. Certain medication can damage your kidneys. And all these can open for analysis. And that's the reason why urine is so valuable. And of course, sometimes people present it with urinary tract infection. Their urine can be analysed to see whether there's any bacteria growth. And those are the important parameters we can check.
But you know, if it's a waste product, George, I mean, and all of these are not meant to be in the body, mm-hmm. how can it ever be useful for anything?
For, you know, it's useful for diagnostic. It's not useful to be consumed, right? Because it is, your body is supposed to get rid of it. Let's talk about amount first, right? Okay. So how much urine do you think an individual will produce in a typical day?
In a day?
In a day.
Gosh, George, I have no idea.
Yes, exactly. So this is what we need to know. Right?
Doesn't it depend on how much water you drink?
But the thing is that you need absolute basic amount of filtration in order to keep your body going and get rid of all this bad stuff. The absolute minimum you need to produce is about a litre or 1.2 litres.
A day.
So that will translate to you need to drink about 1.8 litres of water in order to sustain that. Anything below that, you potentially can make stones or actually be susceptible to kidney infections.
You have to urinate 1 litre of water a day, George?
One litre of urine.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. But the thing is that how much urine do you excrete every void? It's something that we can be calculated. The kidneys, healthy kidneys, will undergo filtrations on an hourly or minute-by-minute basis. We're looking at you producing about 100 to 120 mils per hour. And that is the basic amount that you need to produce. You've imagined that our urinary system constitute the filter and a reservoir, because we are social creatures. We don't just pee anywhere. And then our reservoir will determine that we are continent. So that reservoir can only sustain certain amount of urine before you feel like you want to pee. And when that urine is filling, you don't have sensation that you have a full bladder. Otherwise, you'll be running to toilet all the time.
So that medium is the bladder.
That's right. That reservoir is the bladder. Okay. And how much do you think you can sustain without knowing that your bladder is filling?
I don't know.
It's about 300 mils. That's about 3 hours of constant filling of your bladder without you being aware. So because our body has this really fantastic muscular system that when it's flaccid, you don't have a sensation. When it's stretched a little bit, anything between 300 to 400, so between 3 to 4 hours, that's when you begin to get a little bit uncomfortable. And those are the mechanism in order to make us social creatures. When it's about 400 to 500, the pressure builds up. And what you don't want to happen is that the urine to be reflux back into the kidneys.
A backflow.
Backflow. Mm-hmm. And then that is when people talk about dahan kenjing, mm-hmm. right? And then that is when your bladder becomes overfilled. For women, you might actually cause leakage because the urethra is much, much thinner and shorter. For men, because the prostate actually create a resistance and that backflow is a lot more likely to happen in men. So therefore, when somebody actually has a bladder capacity or holding their urine beyond their bladder capacity, for example, more than 5 hours, that's when you'll begin to actually do damage to yourself because the bladder may stretch beyond repair or the urine might flux back into the kidney.
And that damage is not immediate, it happens over time?
Correct. So with persistent time, for example, men with enlarged prostate, then that damage will eventually make your bladder quite a floppy, useless organ because the contractions will be lost. For women as well, that can happen. So therefore, we ask people not to hold their urine too long and void when they can.
Okay.
So those are absolute basic that you, how much urine you produce.
Wow, that's a lot of information. So every day you excrete about 1.2 litres, mm-hmm. you should.
That's
between
right.
1 and 1.2 litres, which means you need to drink much more water.
Exactly. You need to drink at least 1.8 to 2 litres.
A day. Okay. And 95% of your urine is actually water.
Just water.
Salt, potassium, nitrates, urea. Everything
all
else
these
that
constitute
needs,
urine.
Needs to
and
know,
these
be excreted.
Different components actually will determine the colour.
Wait. And a healthy amount that you excrete at any one time should mm-hmm. be about 100 to 120 mils per hour.
That's right.
And your bladder has this ability to hold about 300 mils.
Correct.
Before which you have the sensation to pee.
Correct.
Okay.
Wow, you're absorbing all that.
Very. I'm paying close attention, George.
I mean, because this is, you know, the whole Klang Valley is noticing, they're calculating how many times they pop to the toilet.
Yes. And would you say then that most of us have a healthy practice of drinking enough water and urinating?
The vast majority of people will. Obviously, it depends on different bodily capabilities, your kidney functions, and also your build. For somebody who is actually much bigger, may require more because your body needs more fluid to excrete all the byproducts. And then for somebody who is actually small build, may not need so much. But on average, I think the vast majority of us will not have any problems because your body adapts to that sort of excretory functions.
And do you think most of us are doing the right thing, isn't drinking enough water and doing the
only
right
those
thing.
Who are not doing the right thing will come to see me, and that's when they get a little bit of advice, a bit of nudging, and then say, okay, look, drink more
water, and you've got to drink even more. What upsets me is if you are onto diuretics,
that's right,
coffee,
yes,
a whole load of alcohol,
correct,
all of that,
that will facilitate any further excretions because coffee is diuretics and then alcohol can absorb, and diabetes. So therefore, somebody who begin to urinate more, we call it polyuria, or have frequency of urination, is indicative of potential problems. So for example, somebody who, let's say, due to insidious reasons such as coffee or spicy food or something like that, that's fine.
Spicy food,
yes,
George?
Spicy food actually
contains... What are you saying about the Indian people? Does that affect your urine?
Go to toilet a little bit more frequently.
Really, George? Is
spicy
that a fact?
Contain capsaicin, then that can irritate bladder to contract more. So you get actually further frequent urinations. Well, that's a good thing because you go to toilet more often to urinate. However,
but drink more water.
Drink
after.
More water because when you urinate more, you become more thirsty. However, whenever you're in a situation where you are excreting more, as undiagnosed diabetic patients will excrete more. Imagine that the glucose actually is inside the urine part. It shouldn't be in the urine because your urine should be absolutely free from any bacteria, any protein, any glucose, because glucose is good stuff.
Yeah.
Whenever you have over concentrations of glucose in your blood, naturally that will leak out into the urine part, and that will attract more urine into the excretory components.
But in general, George, what does your urine tell you about your health?
Okay, let's start with colour, right? Okay, so somebody, obviously, your urine should be lightly yellow in colour. We call it amber yellow. Anything that's extremely pale, it means that you're drinking way too much. For somebody, you may get water toxicity.
Yes.
Because if you're drinking more than 4.5 litres or something, then your body will have diluted sodium, and that's water toxicity.
And then you can die.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of consuming way
too
much water.
Your brain will swell.
Yes, I mean, I think I met somebody who told me an Australian radio station had a competition on air how much water one can drink, and they had one participant who actually died.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's...
Because our body needs to have... a homeostasis of the sodium and potassium. When you dilute it too fast, then that is a potential life-threatening condition.
Okay. We have a question here. If I substitute milk or juice for water, does that account for 1.8 litres per
day? Absolutely. It can be soup, it can be fruit juice, it can be fruit, and as long as water consumption is in that component. Some people just don't like water.
Yeah, like
you know?
Me.
Yeah. Oh, do you not?
I don't like water, George.
Okay, so what do you do? It's
kind
Iced of like
water.
Yeah. Slightly sparkling with a tinge of lemon.
If I had that amount of money, I probably would. But ice water works.
Ice water works. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, you know, for those of those people who don't like water, they know orange juice or your Gatorade will do.
But hey, you know, you got to watch your sugar levels.
Absolutely.
As well.
So, you know, go for these sugar-free Gatorade. Then it might just.
But tea is a diuretic, George.
Indeed. So diuretic by itself is not a problem. It's a bit of a nuisance because it creates inconvenience of frequent urination.
So what I'm saying is when it is a diuretic, you drink it, yes, you are getting that
right.
fluid.
Then you will need
you
to
have
replace.
To make up for it.
Correct, yeah. Because your body will have this osmoreceptor will tell you that when you diurese, your blood becomes more concentrated and it just creates thirst for you to drink more.
Okay. We'll come back and find out more about what
you're excited now.
I didn't think I would be.
That's right.
Give us a call if you have a question. Urine 101 is the title of the show today. Our doctor in the house, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. Number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Doctor in the House series, Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in the studio with me. For the first time, we don't have someone else joining us today,
right.
George.
Yeah, just
the two of us after such a long time.
Delighted.
Only because it's a drainage issue that we're talking about and which is your area of specialty.
We should have more drainage issues every week.
We can't, like, we can't be talking about it. I don't know how many of you feel like peeing at the moment. I mean, Kelly, our producer, who's sitting in here, says she now needs to run, but she doesn't have enough time.
It's near Qingming, and it's always raining in Qingming because there's a poem called Qingming Si Jue Yi Fen Fen. It just means that it's just about to rain. Oh. And then every time I think about this time of the year, I think of we should do a show about the pee, right? And
really?
That's right.
Okay. It is Qingming. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Somebody told me it's 5th of April. Either you do 5 days before or 5 days after. Yeah, is that
true? Majority of people will now stretch it to 2 weeks before and 2 weeks after. That's right. I remember 4 years ago when we were thinking about doing the first Health and Living event.
Yes.
We were a bit worried about Qingming, but you know, we get all these audience coming troops, and then so we had such a wonderful reception. And this is the fourth year now.
The fourth year, George. And I remember, yes, we were worried about Qingming and whether people would come. We were worried about Good Friday and Easter Sunday because it's, you know, it changes every year.
I think health event that you guys,
we come up with,
I think these are important issues. And then, of course, you get fantastic, special guests like the ministers or, the deputy ministers,
Yes. Come join us. I mean, I think Dr. Lee Buncha, I mean, I'm totally digressing here, but if you haven't got your tickets, it's the 6th of April, Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. You know what? If you send in your message now to 018-789-8899, just give me your name and your email number. We will give you a pair of tickets.
Just because, In the spirit of good peeing, then we'll give you this.
But our deputy minister is going to be there, and he's got an interesting story. I mean, Dr. Lee Bunchai is a cardiologist. Mm-hmm. He was in politics, but he didn't want to take on the ministerial position. Mm-hmm. And I will ask him on Saturday what made him change his mind and take on that position.
I'm really looking forward to the show.
Yes, and he is doing extremely well. So join us, come and join us. We have an interesting lineup. bfm.my/health event if you want more information. We digressed the whole...
It's a good plug.
Yes. We have a question from Shafika. Shafika's on the line. And Shafika, you have a question.
Hi, Shafika.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Just curious. Mm-hmm. Because we're Malaysians, when we eat petai, why does our pee, when we pee, why does it smell like petai?
Yeah, it's an odor, right? Okay. Well, it depends whether
Thank you, Shafika.
Yeah, Shafika. Yeah. It depends on whether you actually fry the petai with sambal or without sambal.
That's not true.
Majority of food will not actually be, excreted in the urine. However, certain food that contains certain odor, like asparagus, well known to create some sort of odor, and then petai is well known to do that.
So Nick is also asking via WhatsApp, is it just me or does your pee smell of coffee after you drink coffee? How does this
It depends on whether you do freshly roasted or not, right?
Come on, George.
It is. Well, if you drink very concentrated coffee, because like I mentioned to you, that a lot of caffeine is excreted, and caffeine can have different odor. Pregnant women will have different odor whenever they are pregnant, because there will be excretions that will be slightly different, and then the excess amount of urea can actually cause the urine to be slightly odor.
So how does the filtration system not able to get rid of the smell of it?
It's not necessarily about the filtration system. It's actually the components that is being excreted. Like, for example, the urea that is excreted, an excessive amount of that may create some degree of odor. In fact, we have done a study before that, which you may remember. We actually highlighted a report that certain dogs are used in order to sniff the urine to detect cancer. And then we did that show before, and then that's actually for bladder cancer. If the bladder cancer actually can excrete certain amount of protein, then that might actually be odor that be detected by dogs.
Okay, interesting. Question for Dr. George, please. I want to know visible blood in the urine. There is visible blood in the mm-hmm. urine when I pass, you know,
emotion.
Passing motion.
Yeah.
What could be causing it?
Right, okay. Well, that's a fantastic kind of highlight, okay. In medical school, everyone's taught that painless hematuria, painless blood in the urine, is something to worry about. It's cancer until proven otherwise. In fact...
Oh, really?
That's right. So for the listener out there who is a little bit worried about seeing blood in your urine whenever you defecate, and I really think you ought to see a doctor to determine whether this is blood or not.
Okay, you need when you say motion, well, some of us refer to it as feces.
Yes, defecate.
And as well as urine is different.
Correct. So when you are exerting pressure in the pelvis and then the, let's say, bursting of certain vessels in the urinary tract actually excreting blood is an abnormality needs to be looked at. So I would encourage this listener to first of all actually have a proper diagnosis, because sometimes your urine might look like it's blood stain, but in fact it may not be, because there's certain drugs such as rifampicin actually will be excreted in the urine that actually makes it look red. So first of all, we look under microscope to see whether we can actually see any blood, and if we in the presence of blood, you really need an ultrasound scan or a cystoscopy, which is a telescope examination of the bladder to exclude cancer.
But then when you have dragon fruit, that can scare the hell out of you as
Correct,
well,
Correct, absolutely. So therefore, the colour itself may not be indicative of blood. So therefore, for the listener who is obviously very concerned about this red stain urine during defecation, ought to have it checked out just okay. to make sure that it is not blood.
Sure. Question, when we wake up with a stretched bladder, mm-hmm. meaning it's full,
Correct.
Does that mean that the kidneys didn't rest when we were sleeping?
Mm-hmm.
If the urine is normal, does that mean that the kidneys are resting?
Okay,
that's
right.
A
that's
really a good question.
Fantastic
actually.
Question. Yeah. So all these fantastic, intelligent listeners out there about pee, right? Okay. So
a lot of thought has gone into this.
A lot of thoughts has gone into this. So it's not planted, by the way, yeah. all these questions.
Not at
right.
all.
First of all, in our brain, we excrete a hormone called antidiuretic hormones. You imagine that during the daytime, you want to excrete as much urine as possible. During daytime, you need to rest. So our brain is designed to produce antidiuretic hormones. So it slows down that production of urine. And then therefore, even if your bladder is stretched between 6 to 8 hours of sleep, it doesn't really stretch that much. So every time you pee, you realize that you're only peeing between 300 to 400, because it might be that stretching the bladder actually wakes you up. So therefore, it will not induce any backflow of urine, because there is a valve. Anything that's beyond 700 to 800 mils inside your bladder only causes the reflux. So be assured that your brain is designed to do it that way. However, if you're somebody who's not a good sleeper, or you are playing with your telephones a lot before you go to sleep, your brain doesn't rest properly, and the ADH antidiuretic hormones is deranged. And therefore, you may have something called nocturnal polyuria, meaning that you're producing more urine at night than you should be. So for under those circumstances, you really need to rest, have a good sleep hygiene in order to ensure that you have good amount of ADH
production. Who would have thought, George?
Yeah.
I mean, you always just think about, you know, just your sleep being disturbed, but the effects of it.
Of course, because this particular hormone is produced by the brain, and the whole resting process during sleep is to shut down everything else so that you recuperate. And then when your brain is not adapting to blue lights, and then therefore your dreams affected, and then also your excretions of urine is also affected.
Okay. Do you see more and more people coming to see you?
Yeah. It's a common condition that happens after, you know, for aging populations. So therefore...
Insomnia.
And then also frequent urinations. So the frequent urination itself can be a catch-22 situation, because some people, when they wake up, they can't go back to sleep, and then their partners can't go back to sleep. So big rows in the middle of the night.
Okay, all right. What about the younger people you're seeing? Do you see any trends?
Yeah. You begin to see people who are, you know, those people who are just millennial, who just needs to check their Instagrams every 5 minutes. Those are the people who actually have interrupted sleep.
Okay, and that affects their
urination pattern as well.
Okay. And what do they come and see you for?
Sometimes they get frequent urination. Mm-hmm. Some of them get disturbed.
In the night?
In the night.
Okay.
Therefore.
Any other conditions? What about stones and stuff like that? Do you see a lot of that?
Oh, yes. Dehydration. Earlier on, we talked about this minimum requirement for your urine to flush out all the bad stuff. So calcium and oxalate are the typical components that need to be excreted. When your urine is concentrated, then you get a situation called supersaturations. Calcium oxalate combination makes stones. The other component that is excreted by your body is uric acid. If you're a big meat eater, seafood, you know, rich Kingsman's, you know, diet, then your urine will also contain acidity. And that is a recipe for stone formation.
Okay. So you do see younger people coming in with this as well?
I would imagine, yeah. Because of high meat intake, lack of exercise, and then all these are bad combinations, including the lack of water.
Okay, all right. Okay, my goodness, it's
all
like obesity, everything, diabetes,
indeed,
and you know, younger and younger people are actually being diagnosed with these issues.
So
right?
Therefore, we're here advocating all the good lifestyle changes so that you don't end up getting kidney stones.
Because you always think about the heart, you think about your blood pressure. You
think
know,
of the urine
strokes.
From now on.
Yeah, I know, whoever thinks of that. Okay, we have Osman on the line. Osman, you have a question.
Hi, Osman.
Hi, Dr. George.
Yes.
I'm quite regular with this program.
Yes, thank you.
Mira may know me quite well. Okay, I'm blind, okay?
Oh, yes. We remember you, Osman.
I'm 77 years old.
Yes.
Indeed.
Okay. The last, my life, every 10-15 years I got major surgery, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The last major surgery is bypass, about 10 years ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Then I become blind because of glaucoma.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Now, unfortunately, the last 5 years, I'm okay. My caregiver is my wife. I don't want to really disturb her, you know.
Right.
Now, my urination. Okay. Let me my routine. Every sometime I have every night about 2 hours interval. Eh?
Yes.
Sometimes even 1 hour, depending my intake of water. Right. I have two urinals here. One urinal about 500, and I have two bottles of water, about 500 each. You know.
Right.
Okay. Because I'm blind, for me to rush to the toilet is very, very difficult.
Yep.
Otherwise, I have an overflow.
Yeah. Right.
So, what is your best? Because for me to go forward, I don't want to trouble much of my wife, you know.
Indeed.
But this is all my routine. I think she understands and she appreciates. I can see the color of my urine.
Right.
But that's not important, you know. Okay.
Okay.
What's your question, Osman? Problem. Osman, yeah. Your question being?
My question being, what is the best advice for me? Is am I doing the right way? Two urinal container every I have here. What? The other one is I have two bottles of water. For me to drink.
Sure. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Osman.
I mean,
thank
many
you.
People...
Osman is 77.
Yeah, indeed. I've met Osman before.
Oh,
that's
have
right.
you?
That's right. Yes.
Lucky.
So, yes, indeed. Okay. So, Osman...
You meet all our listeners and I don't get to.
Yes. Well, I'm in the grassroots and I'm in the front line.
You politician.
You're in the ivory tower. So, Osman's situation can have potentially three conditions that are actually causing this. Enlarged prostate is a typical age that your prostate is enlarged and you don't empty 100%. So that can be one reason why he's having frequent urination. The second possibility is what we talked about, the deficiency or derangement of antidiuretic hormones. And the third possibility, it's probably overactive bladder. So in order to improve his condition, he shouldn't really restrict himself from drinking too much because that might be his lifestyle. So there are medications that can actually expand the bladder in order to accommodate more, help him to empty more, or actually try to manipulate the ADH so that he doesn't produce so much urine at night.
Okay, but your advice would be, I think Osman sounds like he's got it under control.
Indeed. I think what he's worried about, his wife suddenly decide to move to the guest room or something. That's right. Okay, it's all right. I think we'll advise Mrs. Osman to get some earplugs. Then that might be useful.
Okay. And you know, Osman is 77 and that's an area, the prostate is an area
correct.
That sort of creeps up on you as you age.
That's right.
We'll come back and find out how a urine test could possibly detect prostate cancer.
Indeed.
The PSA test, we know, we've spoken about this at length, is not really the best measure for prostate cancer. But whether or not you see, you know, future for this test going forward from coming from Ireland, we'll find out more up next. If you have a question, give us a call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is our Urine 101 show with Dr. George Lee, consultant.
We should do this every April.
Yes, coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. If you have just joined us, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, in the studio with us, which means it's a Friday evening. As soon as we're done, you can go home.
I know. That's the weekend.
Today's show is Urine 101, trying to understand everything to do with your pee.
I know. We talked about the colour. We talked about the volume. We talked about the smell, the pad thai and the asparagus and the coffee.
And the dragon fruit.
And the dragon fruit.
Dragon fruit can really scare you. Yeah. If you have forgotten, you've had it. Question, George, from Lau Yin Fong, Belinda. She's asking, what about foamy urine? What does that mean?
This is something that, you know, two of the most common visits from asymptomatic patients to come and see us. One is frothy urine. The other one is something called microscopic hematuria. When you buy insurance and then, you know, you've got some blood in your urine and then the insurance wants to find out what's going on. And that's one of the reasons why I get these asymptomatic healthy patients. Frothy urine, it might mean two things. It might mean that you actually put too much detergent into your toilet bowl. So obviously that can be...
Of course.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Or alternatively, it might just mean that you're having a condition called proteinuria. What the name suggests is that your protein is leaking too much into the urine. And there are a multitude of reasons why that can happen. But most scary one is something called nephrotic syndrome. Nephrotic syndrome is an intrinsic inflammation or impairment of your kidneys. It can be caused by autoimmune disease, IgA nephropathy or nephrotic syndromes, and a multitude of reasons why that happens. When that happens and then you are constantly leaking protein, and you might cause swelling because your protein actually holds on to water in your body. And then without that protein, you swell and your kidney functions will require urgent attention. So for us to determine whether it's truly proteinuria or not, we ask you to do a very simple thing. It's very primitive, but very simple. We ask you to pee 24 hours of urine into a big container, take it to the lab. We'll find out the exact amount of urine protein that you excrete in 24 hours. And that's a good way for us to determine whether you've got a renal impairment that contributes towards proteinuria.
24 hours.
That's right.
You know, George, I've always wondered, sometimes the toilet bowl has ants around it, and then there's this old grandma tale that you could possibly have diabetes.
Indeed.
Is that true?
It is very true. Yeah,
really?
It's true. That's right. So your grandma is very, very well qualified medical follower.
See, she didn't need you.
That's right. Yeah, well, you don't need us. You're probably more qualified. It's, you know, everyone calls you Dr. Mira these days.
I didn't know about the ants, George.
Well, you know, diabetes is, you know, sugary urine, basically. Yep. Your body cannot tolerate, the insulin cannot tolerate the absorptions of the glucose into your body. And an excess amount is just excreted. In fact, the younger one, type 1 diabetes, actually have conditions called ketoacidosis. That's when their urine, apart from containing a lot of sugary concentrations that attracts ants, it also smells of alcohol. It smells like a sweet fruit, that sort of smell. It's ketosis. Basically, it's your body breaking down muscles, and then in order to create this sweet smell. So apart from just the sugary component, the urine might smell a little bit sweet alcohol. So that's another odor that is extremely diagnostic.
Okay. Question Roger Lowe is asking, I'm 65, I drink a glass of water before going to bed, and then I would normally need to get up to urinate twice or three times a night. But if I drink one can of beer, which is the same quantity of liquid, strangely, I don't get up to urinate. Why is that?
Okay, because he's tranquilized.
Righto.
So that's right. So some people just kind of like said, you know, oh, one glass of wine, actually sleep like an angel. It's not the diuretic effects only that actually influence your urine productions and actually how alert you are. So if you are completely tranquilized with alcohol, go for it. It's okay.
George, you're not supposed to say that.
It's one can of beer.
Stop.
Okay, so okay. Roger, okay. No beer.
All right. But
you wake up to pee.
I'm just thinking then why don't we pee in the bed?
Oh.
How is
would
it?
You like
how
to do does, that?
How
to
no. know? But why is it if you are tranquilized?
Okay.
How? What's working in the brain that's stopping you from peeing okay, in right. bed?
So when we were much, much younger, you know, we will have no restrictions of where we pee because, you know, when you're in a primitive state that you don't really need to and you don't understand the concept of being a social creature, that you can't pee anywhere. So you learn that mechanism
right.
of a social being a social creature, that you only pee in appropriate time and place. And that is a definition of continent. So in order to retain that appropriateness, your brain learns to actually keep your sphincter extremely tight that you don't actually let go.
So it's a trained.
It is a
you
trained.
You train your that, brain to do that.
Because as a baby, you don't do that. And eventually you train to do in, urinate in appropriate place and time. However, whenever you get horrible, horrible dreams, and then so that might just overcome that particular training, and some people might just get these incontinence or at night. It's actually called nocturnal enuresis. And that's very common in children because psychologically, if a child is extremely dependent, they have anxiety trait, and then they are very, very anxious about something, that trait will actually contribute towards nocturnal enuresis. So you bed wet. Yours okay. truly actually went through that. You know,
yes.
I'm just a very sensitive, anxious boy. I was an anxious boy. No
stop
longer.
Stop it, George. I'll give you the psychologist's number after this. But right. you stopped at 12.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
No, well, 12.
You finally trained your brain
that's right.
to work that sphincter.
Late bloomer. Mm. Yeah, you know, no choice.
Good for you. Yeah. How do you flush out? Question from Peng Chuam, how to flush out kidney stones of 3 millimeters in
oh,
size?
Oh, right. Okay, very easy. Lots and lots of exercise because movement itself can help you flush out.
I've heard you tell a patient, jump up and down. George.
Indeed. Well, in fact, there are lots of studies to show that movement actually helps. Because
jumping up and down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because movement itself promotes the actual
movement of the stone.
That's right.
Thank God for gravity.
That's right. And then the other thing is diuresis. I'd say lots of coffee, lots of alcohol, and then that will help.
George, no.
Well, because anything diuretics in order to flush out. That's why people talked about drinking beer in order to flush out the stones.
But will that not make it worse?
Not really, because 3 millimeters, the diameter of the ureter is about 5 millimeters. So 3 millimeter stone, don't get it operated on. It will come out in no time.
3 millimeters is not really a problem. When is it a problem?
5 millimeter and above.
Okay. Yeah.
But some people pass 1 centimeter or more.
Wow.
That's right, you know. Well, as Malaysians, you know, we can tolerate a lot of things.
We have a very versatile... What is it called?
Ureter. That's right,
yeah.
Ureter.
Very
that's
versatile. Right. We underestimate some parts of our body, actually.
You underestimate the power of urine, you know? So,
yes,
so
I
far
did.
We have, you know, talked about all these things, and we haven't even talked about urine being a component to check for athletes who is doping.
Go ahead, tell us. How does that happen?
Okay, because a lot of excretion, if you take extra amount of certain medications, like, for example, anabolic steroid, you know, for us to diagnose a condition such as steroid overload, or you know, we can actually measure corticosteroid in the urine. We can measure catecholamines in the urine, so that can make diagnosis of pheochromocytoma, cortisol overloads, a lot of things.
But we'll also come up with ways to mask that, isn't it?
Yeah,
from not appearing in the urine.
Correct. Like, for example, you know, allegedly the cyclist
Armstrong's
effect was that, you know, he was using other ways and enhance his hemoglobin. So that's
correct.
A way to mask it because that's not excreted in the urine.
In the urine. Okay. Some things you can hide, some things you just can't, can you?
Mm-hmm. But eventually get caught out.
Yeah, I know. Let's talk about this prostate test that, you know, they think a urine test would probably be able able to solve it. What's your take on that?
Right. Fantastic idea. Because if you imagine, for those of you out there who are thinking about calling in, because prostate specific antigen is what the name suggests. It just tells you something is wrong with your prostate, PSA, right? Or persistent stress and anxiety.
No, don't confuse everyone.
Okay, right. PSA just means that something is wrong with your prostate.
Prostate-specific antigen.
Yeah, because it is prostate-specific, right? Okay. And in fact, women don't have it because women don't have prostate. And that's how it was discovered in a rape case. Because when the secretions that actually was taken out, that actually showed PSA. If a woman's body actually had PSA, it just means that there is a possibility of intercourse, right? Okay. So that PSA itself tells you something is wrong in your prostate. It could be cancer, it could be infection, it could be old age. So PSA is useless in telling you whether this is a cancer marker or not, unless you do a further test such as a biopsy. And this particular promise actually is quite useful potential because, number one, it doesn't require blood tests because what it means is that somebody who just pee and then you analyze the urine. Number two is that it claims to differentiate between cancer and non-cancer and aggressive cancer versus a non-aggressive cancer. Because what the physiopathology or the basis of this study is showing that cancerous, aggressive cancerous tumor in the prostate will shed certain DNA into the urine. And the detection of that DNA will tell you that you have a high probability of aggressive cancer. We've been through this many times that prostate cancer actually is, the vast majority of prostate cancer is slow growing.
Yep.
So most people die with prostate cancer rather than die of prostate cancer. What we don't have a tool to find out currently is how to differentiate between those people who've got aggressive cancer and non-aggressive cancer, because aggressive cancer will require urgent treatment. And this is a potential landmark paradigm shift that will differentiate between cancer and non-cancer in the urine, plus also highlighting the aggressive cancer.
Are you optimistic about it? I mean, they are trying to secure funding for clinical use in the future. I mean,
okay, but right.
If it has so much potential, George, I don't see why funding should be a problem.
Okay, right.
What's the downside to this?
Actually, this is an idea that has been around for a long time. So it's only been done in the Irish community recently because they highlighted differentiation between aggressive and non-aggressive. In fact, the German actually had come up with this study a long time before that. The downside of this are two. Number one, according to the German study, is that you need to actually provoke the prostate in order to excrete that amount of DNA. So how do you provoke the prostate? You need to have rectal examination, aggressive rectal examination, to squeeze out a little bit of DNA. So in the past, in Malaysia, whenever we have patients who read about this, so we have to do a lot of vigorous rectal examination, guys. And then afterwards you pee, and then we send your urine to Germany in order to analyze it. Not very attractive for some
of us. Aggressive sounds very painful.
That's right.
It's like, it's painful. Rectal examination.
It's painful for the surgeon.
Because, George.
No, sorry. We still have to insert finger in there. So I would imagine in order to enhance the amount of DNA that is in the urine, because the urine can get incredibly diluted, so you really need to somehow provoke the prostate. And that particular study didn't actually highlight that. Okay, the second concern I have is specificity of 70%. So in this study, it says that 70% of the time, it actually differentiate between aggressive and non-aggressive. Are you happy to do a test that tells you, oh, 70% chance of positive outcome? Most people are quite happy to say, okay, I have 70% chance of getting a positive result. But on the reverse side, when you give someone a negative result, are you happy to accept a false positive of a or false negative? So you're telling somebody that you don't have cancer. However, in fact, you actually have cancer. And that's a 30% chance of that.
So this is just probabilities?
Correct.
Like the gene tests?
Correct. So if you have a negative test, we will need to counsel you and say, okay, you have no cancer. However, that's only kind of like 30% accurate that we had no cancer.
Well, you know how I feel about these tests.
Indeed.
Tumor markers.
That's right.
Gene but, testing.
Well, I guess we're heading the right direction. Yeah. So, you know, when the technology of analyzing DNA enhances, when we analyze specifically what's have aggressive cancer advances, and then also whenever we have less and less of a false negative, then I think we're heading the right direction.
Okay, last question. I'm going to go through this because I think it is worth understanding. Chia Tian Yuan is asking, why is it whenever you're in a cold you know, room, like a Cineplex, for an example, and it's freezing, why do we want to pee more?
Yeah, okay. Well, cold weather makes your bladder capacity slightly smaller, and then also you actually makes your bladder a little bit more irritated, and then so you want to feel, you feel like you want to pee more.
Okay, that's as simple as that.
As simple as that.
Okay, so...
So bring a blanket.
Bring a blanket. I still don't understand in a country like ours why we need to have such
cold
Cineplex. Why do we need to feel like we're freezing in a tropical country? So would you say urine tests are reliable in general?
Extremely reliable. You know, most of the time we can easily diagnose urinary tract infection extremely reliably. Mm-hmm. The detections of blood present or absent in the urine, it's almost like definitive. Present of what blood, like white cell, red cell, eosinophil, extremely accurate. If it's not accurate and not valuable, people don't get charged for doping. Do you know what I mean? Because you need to have that sense of accuracy in order to accuse somebody of doing something wrong and withdraw your gold medal. So therefore, urine test is here to stay. I think for many, many years, perhaps that's being ignored. And I think combinations of urine, blood, and also other samples, such as hair samples and skin samples, eventually will be the way forward for a lot of forensic medicine and also diagnostic medicine.
I have one burning question that I have to ask you. You can choose not to answer it if you're not comfortable. What about supplements?
Supplement? Mm. In order to...
You know, supplements, you take supplements, a lot of it are in very high dosages of concentrated of whatever that you're supplementing, a lot of which gets wasted.
Yeah, so well, because you're absolutely right. You know, somebody who takes calcium supplement, for example, you put yourself at risk of getting kidney stones. You know, vitamin C, oxalate, you know, can ascorbic acid overdose can actually make stones. So most people would imagine that there's no such thing as overdose of supplement. I don't take supplement myself because I'm just too lazy. But I'll give you scenarios when patients turn up to my clinic and then they say, oh, doc, I'm really worried about all these medicine that you gave me because Mike actually caused me to damage my kidney. But then they come up with like 15 tablets that they take for their supplement. All these needs to be excreted somehow. So it's putting a lot of strain on your kidney. Come on, go for fruit and vegetables. Those are a lot better. Yeah. Go for pad thai.
Or the dragon fruit.
Yeah.
You know, I always feel supplement when you need to.
Yeah.
Yeah. If a blood test shows you're deficient in something, then supplement then. But, you know, I could be wrong. I mean, the jury's still out there when it comes to supplements.
Have a balanced diet. Everything's in there. Yeah. So we only talk about supplement in era when we have malnutrition. You know, it's like kind of over, or most of us are overnutritious at the moment.
At the moment, yes. Okay. Yeah. So what's your advice for a healthy, normal production of urine?
Okay, right. So you need to make friends with urologists, you know, because urine.
You don't have to.
That's right. Okay. Well, actually, at least you don't make friends with urologists. Watch out for your urine because it might tell you a lot of things about you.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially the blood.
That's right.
I would say, pay attention to that.
Yeah, pay attention to it because it's the easiest thing you see, right, in a toilet bowl. It's not get flushed straight away and it doesn't get clouded with tissue papers or anything.
Drink that water.
That's right.
Thank you, George, for joining us today. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in our Urine 101 series, Doctor in the House, on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.